What's up, everybody? We're back again with a new episode. The games are coming thick and fast, and the holidays as well is coming. So, without further ado, welcome to the latest and greatest episode of Far Corner Podcast. So, Josh, how you doing, my man?
What holidays was, there's nothing special about this period, so,
What do you mean? Christmas is coming, bro.
So?
Yeah, I'm expecting a gift from you, so I don't know what you mean by so.
I don't know stuff about Christmas, so I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Okay, let me not see my gift first, then we'll know, we'll deal with that off air, and let me not see my gift.
You already know, you're whining yourself, so... All I'll say is,
in advance, in case the listener start hearing and that person's voice, just know that Josh is 6 feet under.
It hasn't got it to that. But just know there's no gift coming, and there will never be any gift ever.
So I think this past few weeks have been very, very entertaining, and so many scandalous things happening. What do you think about the UEFA draw that they did on Monday?
Those clowns. It was a disgrace. Nothing short of a disgrace. And here's why. The stupid excuse they gave us was that an external service provider was telling them, like those doing the draw, Giorgio Marchetti, Pedro Pinto, Ashavin, former Arsenal player, and then I've forgotten the last guy. So
Ivanovic.
So they are telling me, So they are telling me that they don't know. Like, this is not rocket science. So you don't even need an external service provider to tell you this, that two teams that face each other in the group cannot face each other again. And two teams from the same country cannot face each other. So please, what is so hard that they need an external service provider? So it is just foolishness that they don't even... Like I'm not the smartest person on earth. But even I can remember those two things. They are so simple and straightforward. So you go out, you do nonsense, and then you blame them. And then here's that's the first part, is incompetence from those that did the draw. I won't even blame the service providers because it is common sense or common knowledge. That's one. Secondly, what's this nonsense of you doing the whole draw? You had Real Madrid versus Benfica before the mistake occurred. So someone should explain to me why Real Madrid and Benfica were put back in the pot. And no one should come and tell me this nonsense of there was a mistake, so we have to do the entire draw. No. You have to correct the mistake from where the mistake happened. So I think Real Madrid have every right to be aggrieved because now, obviously, they've gotten a much tougher draw in PSG.
Well, let me just tell you, like, I remember we spoke off air that very day when this thing happened. The truth is, as much as everyone loves the beautiful game, football is scripted. Let me just be truthful about it. There are some things that happen that, yes, it's sporting. But they try to make...
The draws are scripted.
Yeah, the draws are scripted because they try to make the games... they try to make a spectacle out of some of the fixtures so that they can actually have to sell.
I agree with you that I won't say they are surely scripted, but I said there's a big chance they are. And then it's not even hard to do it. Because you're the one touching the ball, right? You can just do things to script it. So you can just make some balls hot or warm. You can make some balls... you can do something that only those of you in the room would notice. But then to mess up the draw in such a terrible way, I think they've just exposed it for people like yourself now to now come out and say this openly.
Yes, it's just like Hollywood. You have great actors and you have average actors. So the people that they brought, they didn't follow the script perfectly. They didn't execute the script perfectly. Because if they executed the script perfectly, we could have had the because the draw they were looking for was Messi and Ronaldo facing each other. That was the draw they were looking for. But they didn't actually execute that script perfectly. And they played their hands and they gave themselves away. If normally this has been happening years upon years in for UEFA, so although I just think it's scandalous, and this just shows what I've been saying for quite a while. Like when people were crying about the Super League, yes, I might know many people might not agree about the Super League, but don't paint the picture and make UEFA seem like a saint, because UEFA, they are very, very bad, and they are even worse than Florentino Perez and the Super League.
Okay. I'm not going down that road anymore. I think Florentino Perez and the Super League, the idea of it might not have been terrible, but the way they wanted to execute the idea was terrible. And then for UEFA themselves, So I'm sure most people have already heard about it. We missed our last episode on Tuesday, so yeah, apologies for that. It seems like we've been missing a lot of episodes lately. But these things happen, I guess. Now that's out of the way. So here's where the problem happened. You had Man United being drawn to face Villarreal, which obviously should not have happened because they were in the same group. And then United were not put as a possible opponent for Atletico Madrid. That's where they actually met. So Atletico Madrid got Bayern, and obviously being the cowards that they are, complained to UEFA, oh no, please, we don't want to face Bayern, please, remove us from Bayern, shamelessly. And then, obviously, UEFA had to do it. But another thing that was very funny was Chelsea got Lille twice. The easiest team Chelsea could have gotten, they got them twice. So, talk about luck.
And yeah, they're very lucky.
Yeah. And this just shows that sometimes, like, you know, I told you that topping the group is actually not everything, because you could top the group and get PSG. You could finish second and get Leo. So it's just a toss of a coin, really. But for UEFA, I think they need to do better. I think now they are talking about doing the draws without technology, that maybe further draws will be done, like, manually by people, just old-fashioned, pick the ball with someone's name, this, yo, you versus you. But I want to ask you something. What do you think about, because, you know, when we grew up with this, I want to ask you two things. First, do you agree that the draw should have been redone from start, or are you like me that says, just do it after match?
They could have gone back to the specific place they did the error. So now, it would be outrage.
Exactly. So now a lot of people are with UEFA like, oh no, let's do the draw again. But it's the same thing that happens everywhere, where you have someone in authority and then the person says something and everybody just agrees it's correct. Meanwhile, no one wants to think for themselves, like, why is this thing correct? Like, why? Why can't you go back? So, like, that's one. Then secondly, what do you think about this? Because now I'm starting to see that it's nonsense. With Chelsea getting Lille twice, I'm now starting to question, why do teams from the same country not face each other in the round of 16? I think that's nonsense. Because you have a case where Man City and Liverpool are two of the strongest teams in Europe, not just England. So Chelsea cannot face them. Chelsea actually benefited from their incompetence of not topping their group and then got Lille. Because trust me, if City and Liverpool were possible opponents for Chelsea, there's no way they would have gotten Lille twice. So what do you think about teams not being able to face teams from their country in the round of 16?
The truth is, I like the rule, because the rule was trying to avoid fixtures that we can see in our leagues. It gets a bit redundant when you see almost the same fixture that will happen twice in the league games, then it's not happen twice again in the Champions League. So the rule was trying to make sure that even if that happens, that will be in the latter stages, not at the early stage of the Champions League. And the possibility of that even happening in the latter stage is very, very slim, except that both teams are very, very good to get to the latter stages. So I don't see any issue with that. At the end of the day, if the two English clubs meet each other down the line, that means they are actually very good to actually get to that points that will, which they will meet. But them meeting at this early stage, like just for example, let's say Chelsea were to face Liverpool, like in a few weeks' time, Chelsea are even facing Liverpool already.
Because Chelsea are obviously on point form, not meant to be in the quarterfinals, which they will get to because they got Leo.
But that's their own luck. At the end of the day, they could have easily gotten Real Madrid, and this won't be a conversation. So that's how it is.
Okay, fair enough. Chelsea fans obviously very happy with the draw, but with their current form, who knows if they can even beat Lille? Although Lille are like 11th in the French league, so yeah. Then again, I might be clutching at straws. Okay, so now enough of that. Let's go to the leagues and let's start with the La Liga. More off the field than on the field with Real Madrid. Real Madrid have announced some players have COVID. I think about 4 and 3 backroom staff. The most notable of the backroom staff is Ancelotti's son, who is his assistant. And we have Gareth Bale, who always seems to be like getting either injured or something. Like, he's never available for Real Madrid. And in this case, I think we have to feel a bit of sympathy for him, because it's true no fault of his, or maybe he went out when he shouldn't have. But Bale, Marcelo, Modric, and I think one other player I'm forgetting, they all have COVID. Now, the interesting part for me is Real Madrid mentioned these people, but Premier League clubs will be hiding the identity of the players, like it's one top secret for the government or whatever. Like, which way do you think is better? Real Madrid's way, list the players, or hide the players? Because I don't think this is naming and shaming. You're not mocking them or blaming them for being positive. You're just mentioning them. Basically, it's the same thing they do in the NBA. They mention the players that are positive. Only Premier League.
There are some things that I don't really see a right or wrong side of it. For example, the positive about naming them is, now, anybody that knows that they were in contact with Modric will have to self-isolate. Do you understand? Or anyone that had meetings.
Which actually like makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Then the other part of it now is, for Premier League club, looking at it, now there can actually be stigma in this thing. For example, now, the truth is, human beings,
players did not get vaccinated, is that it?
Yes, exactly. There will still be stigma, there will be backlash and say, oh, you're the, look at you now, you've been against the jab and now you're having COVID, you're the cause of this, you're the cause of that. There is other ones where players now, when you come back to the field, there'll be a type of way you get looked at. So there are so many, many things. So I don't feel like the best thing to do is, if the club confirms a player has COVID, then the player should go and do their self-isolation and treatment. Then it's not up to the player to now announce to the world that, yes, I have COVID. Do you understand?
Okay, so you support the Premier League clubs in hiding their identity. That's basically...
No, I don't support anybody. I just think there's no right or wrong in this situation.
But surely you have, like, your own opinion, right?
Yes. Me, I would prefer to know if a player, so that I can even be praying for the player's recovery. So that is if I like the player, let me put that out there.
That's God will listen to your prayer, because we all know you're here, so chance of that happening. For me, I've already, from the tone and everything, you already know that I prefer if you list the players, because There's nothing there. They have not contacted something that is incurable, that it will bring a heavy stigma on them. If people are giving them backlash for not getting vaccinated, then the backlash should also go to the Premier League for not making it mandatory. Of which, if they make it mandatory, there will still be backlash on there. So it's a lose-lose situation for those in charge. And even the UEFA president, Alexander Seferin, yesterday, he said that they are not going to make it mandatory for players to get vaccinated. They are going to give players a reason, like tell the players, like, say, okay, this is why it is wise to get vaccinated. These are the benefits of getting vaccinated, but they are not going to shove it down anybody's throat, which I think is fair enough. Like, everyone is old enough. No one is stupid. Everybody knows why you might need to get vaccinated. So I don't think they should make players make it mandatory.
Looking at it, they should be able to still win against Cadiz.
Yeah, I agree with you. They should still be able to win. But now is actually interesting because Ancelotti has been reluctant to rotate his squad. We've had virtually the same starting lineup. The only difference has been maybe the right wing position where we've seen Asensio play, we've seen Rodrigo play. But he has been reluctant to rotate. But now COVID is forcing his hands a bit. But I still think Madrid have enough, more than Cadiz, if I'm being honest. So, yeah, not too much to be said there. Now, over to Barcelona. Obviously, we know they've been struggling this season. So, what happened? They invented a trophy for Barcelona. Like, okay, just go ahead and win this and make yourselves happy. But guess what? They even messed that one up too. So, please, how on earth Barcelona not win Boca Juniors? Just explain to us.
I know some people will bring up the excuse and say Barca rotated, rested players, started some players that were fringe and all of that. But still, like, let's be real. This was Boca Juniors. Like, I know Boca Juniors are one of the strongest side in Argentina, but still, Barcelona should still be coming up with a victory. But, like, honestly, there's no excuse for this one. It's a Maradona Cup to honor Maradona, and Barcelona, they failed Maradona, like, by losing in a penalty shootout. Let me even highlight that. So it's just embarrassing to see.
What was his full-time score, normal game score?
The full-time score was 1-1.
God, I'm done. I don't even have the energy to throw Barcelona again. It's a joke. Like, it's now a sad, pathetic joke. Like, I don't even. Why am I bothering myself even talking about Barcelona? Can we just talk about their La Liga game this weekend? And please just tell Barcelona fans that they can win that game.
Barcelona is going to face Elche at the Camp Nou. So let me just say this: if Barcelona cannot win Elche at home, any top four hopes, anything that anybody might be hoping for, it's gone. Anything like we can still do this, man. No. If you cannot get 3 points against Elche, then I'm sorry, man. They're not a serious club. They should just forget about anything, any ambitions.
Let me get this right. You're still waiting for the Elche game before you know Barcelona is not a serious club.
They're not serious, but if they cannot get 3 points against Elche, then any ambitions they have this season, they should just forget about it in next season.
But if there's any out for Barcelona, is that the teams above them are also very inconsistent in terms of the likes of Real Betis, Real Sociedad, Atletico Madrid. One of them might slip up enough to help Barcelona sneak into the top four. But even that looks very unlikely.
Yes. You know this thing, eh? Two Olodos, one person goes to carry first. Like, Barcelona.
Isn't that how Chelsea made the top four last season and the season before?
I don't know. You can say that, but like, what I'm just trying to say is, these other teams above Barcelona, they are giving Barcelona the chance to come back. But Barcelona, they are even terrible, more terrible. They are like, don't give us chance. We are not taking it. So no matter how Atletico fail, Barca will still fail more than Atletico. That's how it is.
I find it very hard to argue with that. So someone that could have actually really helped Barcelona, Sergio Aguero, but unfortunately has been forced to retire. Wish him the best. It's very sad to see someone having to retire on obviously not his terms.
This is just actually heartbreaking. I was watching the live when from the company. I was watching it and he was in tears. His family on the other side was in tears. Pep Guardiola came. It was a very emotional event, but But I just feel like I think he has done the best he could. He said himself that he tried everything he could so that he could continue playing. But according to the medical experts, their advice, and he took the advice by retiring, and he doesn't want to worry his family. And I think that's a good thing. Like, fortunately, as much as we love the game, the beautiful game, football, but life comes first. And if you look at his career, he's a very decorated player. He's Manchester City's greatest ever player. He has so many awards going for him. The player with the most goal ratio in the Premier League history. The player with the most hat-trick as well. The foreign player with the most goals in Premier League. Like, he has so many good hat-tricks and good moments as well. But I think what Aguero will always remember, even when
Aguero!
I think that's what he always remember. I think his favorite goal will always be the one on the 13th of March 2012 when he scored that goal in 93rd minute to win City their first ever Premier League title. So that's a very, very beautiful way to burn out. And his last goal was against Real Madrid, funny enough. So
cool. I mean, that's the level of the man. Classical goal. His only goal for Barcelona.
Yeah, it's only good for Barcelona. It's just a sad thing that we couldn't enjoy
the match.
I know you. Why do you say this one? This is about Aguero. You're bringing this guy.
Well, Aguero played for Barcelona right before retiring, did he not?
But why are you making it about Barcelona again? We're talking about Aguero here.
The win would have been his last goal by making it a consolation goal.
This guy. It's okay. You win.
But just to buttress on it, as you said, Aguero will go every 108 minutes in the Premier League. That is insane. Like, that is actually insane. People forget that Aguero was really hit and blighted by injuries. If not for injuries, I think Aguero would have done over 200 Premier League goals easily. We're talking like 220 without injuries, honestly. Like, he was that good. I think for me, he's the best foreign striker ever in the Premier League, foreign player ever. I know he's very tight. People say Thierry Henry, but for me, I didn't watch much of Henry. That was one. And even, I mean, Aguero is just something else. Like, against every team, he scored hat-tricks against top clubs. Like, I know he scored 2 hat-tricks against Chelsea, I believe. I think 12 hat-tricks in all in the Premier League. Just insane. 260 goals for Man City. The guy is a phenomenal. And like I said before, wish him the best. And now,
gracias, Kun Aguero.
And for the Serie A, we have 2 top fixtures. We have Milan versus Napoli of the last few weeks. Can they get back on track against Napoli?
I don't know about it, because looking at Napoli too, they've been struggling since Victor Osimhen got his injury. And I don't know if some of the reports I'm reading is actually true, but they are saying Victor Osimhen might be on track to actually come back. But I don't know if he will come back for a game like this. I don't know. I think he's still out for a game like this. But I just feel like both teams are struggling, and both teams they actually need points. Napoli, they were first. Now they are fourth. That's how they've missed the Nigerian strikers so much. So I think this is a game where if Napoli still think that they should be in the title race, now I think Napoli should find a way to win.
I think this game is very, very difficult to call. I'm not even going to try. But what I'm going to say is AC Milan need to bounce back from their embarrassment against Liverpool, losing at home to a Liverpool C-string team. That's unforgivable for me. Their fans can start forgiving them if they win this big game. And for Napoli, I struggle to see them. I mean, like you said, they've been missing Osimhen since, so we'll see how it goes for them. But it's going to be very, very tough. A tough ask for them to win Milan. And we have Atalanta, the high flying, free scoring, but poor defending Atalanta. They're actually in third place now, and they face Mourinho's side. Roma.
The Atlanta game, it's difficult to call because I know for a fact that Atlanta will try their best. They will attack and score. But Mourinho, we know how defensive Mourinho's teams can get at times. And looking at the form of Roma lately, Roma's form hasn't been that bad. They are in a very good vein of form as well. But I just think that Roma, they've struggled to beat any top four team this season in the Serie A. So I think this might be the case again.
Yeah. For me, I won't say it's going to be easy, but I'll say I expect Atalanta to come away with the 3 points at the end of the game. And now over to the Barclays Premier League. Let's start from all the cancelled games. Now, obviously, they were the right calls because you cannot have people with COVID playing games, and you cannot have teams with... Okay, so now the protocol is if a team has 13 players missing for whatever reason, the game has to be called off. I'm not sure they exactly had 13. I think Leicester had 9 players. Watford said they had a lot, but we don't know how many exactly. Now, I think it would be unfair to say that they must have 13 before you call off games. So, we've had cases of teams having less than 13 players, but games still being called off. You think that's fair? I think it's fair.
No, I don't think it's fair. You know why? Do you remember there was a part earlier this season? I think it was... what team was? I think it was Brentford. I forgot it's Brentford or Brighton, one of them. When they had COVID issue, but they still went on to play their game. I've forgotten which team it was, but I'm very sure that this thing happened. It was not much. I think it was two or three cases.
In the cup.
I cannot really remember it, but I remember that.
I think it was the cup. Yeah, it was the Carabao Cup. I can't remember the team, but it was in the Carabao Cup. But like you said, two or three cases is very different from 9 to 30, is it not?
No, but at the end of the day, like all these big teams, they have the squad to cope with it.
How are it now? Big. You see the problem. You see the problem is people just say Chelsea has a big squad. Chelsea does not have a good squad, and we've seen that recently. Yes, they have a big squad, but the problem is these players that are starting now should be coming on for 5-10 minutes in games. They should never be starting games. People like Barkley should not even be coming on as a sub. So you have people like...
Why do you hate this Barkley guy so much?
No. Saul should be bundled back to Spain. But like I even said a comment that if an angry Chelsea fan just said that Chelsea should send Saul back to Spain and he should be the one to pay for his flight. That Chelsea should not spend another pound on him. That he's worthless. But I won't go that far. I think they should pay for his flight, but still, they should bundle him. I digress. For the COVID issues, I think once you have, for me, if you have 6 starters out, it doesn't make any sense to, like, out through COVID. If it's injuries, it's your problem. But if it's COVID, then I think the game should be called off.
For example, now what will you now say about, for example, what will you say about Real Madrid now? Who will still take and play their games?
Real Madrid have Marcelo out. Marcelo has barely had a kick this season, let's be honest. Bale out. Bale also not a starter. Asensio out. Yes, Asensio started the last game and scored, but has he been great this season? No, he has not. Modric is the only one that they are really missing. So, and the assistant coach, unless they are telling me that Ancelotti cannot coach without the assistant, then
no. The reason why I'm saying this is, where do we actually draw the line and say, okay,
you draw the line at 6 or more? You cannot tell me Modric is out, so the game should be called off. What if he was injured? So,
okay, no problem. I hope it doesn't happen to teams where they actually force them to play, where some key players are out due to COVID or illness. But we'll see.
So Brentford's manager Thomas Frank has suggested that this weekend's fixtures moved, and we know 5 of the 10 fixtures have been cancelled. But he said everything should be moved so that teams can recover, and then so the Boxing Day fixtures can be played in full. Do you think that makes sense, or is it better just to cancel these 5 games that have been affected heavily?
I understand the thought process there. Like, if you move all the fixtures, everyone can regroup and recover so that when Boxing Day comes, everyone can have most of their players ready. But the thing is, it just depends on if the Premier League themselves can find a way to a later date to actually fix all those fixtures in, because we all know that some of all these clubs, they have other commitments like the FA Cup, the Champions League down the line. So it's actually difficult. Like, postponing fixtures is not as easy as everyone thinks. You have to actually check the calendar year. And with so many games next year, even the World Cup will still be played next year. So I don't know where there will be a free slot to actually fix in those games if they actually say they want to postpone most of them.
Okay, so I would say two different things now. I would say I agree with you that fixtures are not easy to postpone, but at the same time, they are not the most difficult things in the world to postpone, because the season is 10 months long, or how many months? I believe a season is usually 10 months long or 9 months. So you have all that time to play just 38 games in a season. Even if you're playing Champions League, even if you're playing FA Cup, there should be time. That's one. So I'm not buying there's no space to put games. That's one. For me to say they can postpone now. But then for me to now look at the flip side is, okay, so now you want to postpone games because a lot of teams have been badly hit by COVID. In five teams have been badly hit, so 5 games have been called off. Liverpool have been hit. Van Dijk, at least they mentioned Van Dijk. We heard Klopp speak against the hiding of names. Jürgen Klopp said that clubs should see the players who are positive, and Liverpool have already done that, said Virgil van Dijk has it. Chelsea, Thomas Tuchel a few weeks ago said Kovacic had it. Now we know Lukaku has it as well. I think Callum Hudson-Odoi as well. So Chelsea and Liverpool mentioning players, other clubs refusing to do that. But then the interesting thing now is, let's say you move these games this weekend, yeah? And now not everybody at these clubs has COVID. We all know that. So now imagine the players that actually don't have COVID, they can go out because there's no lockdown in England. So now for example, you have a team where 10 players have COVID, 10 is a lot. So their game is called off. Then like 7 that don't have COVID, out of those 7 that don't have COVID, they can still go out and get COVID. So it really doesn't make much of a difference, unless the players promise to stay indoors, which they might not do that. Even if they promise, they might break their promise and everything. So I think just get these games over with. These 5 that you can play now, play them and don't postpone them. That's the way I see it.
Exactly. And one thing to remember is, since they don't even have COVID, they can actually take the break and rest, and there'll be a lot. They might even be better. They'll be in a better physical condition when they actually face those teams that are battling with COVID crisis. So, for example, let's say Manchester City now, that they are firing in all cylinders, they're not actually going and regroup when they're not battling with COVID or anything. They actually have that break to actually take their time to do whatever they want to do and learn whatever tactics they want to learn. When they come back and start meeting teams that have been struggling and battling with COVID, like, it'll be easy pickings for them. So why not play your game since you don't have COVID crisis? So that's the way I see it too as well.
Yeah, I get that point. But City fired everybody, or virtually everybody, easy pickings, as Leeds found out in midweek.
That was a very difficult lesson to learn.
So just briefly on Leeds, Marcelo Bielsa, you think he should, because he has this thinking of, if plan A doesn't work, then the plan B is to do plan A better. Do you think he should be more conservative against the big teams?
He has been playing like that for years. So I don't think there'll be any doubts in his mind to change the pattern of play. But the truth is, like Leeds, if they're not careful, they'll be in a dogfight. So they need to start getting points. I know
they are in the dogfight already, not they will be.
I'm just saying, I know they've had their injury crisis and all of that, but they need to start getting points on the board. So that's where I see it. But for Manchester City, Pep Guardiola once again making the Premier League look like a farmer's league, dominating and smashing teams everywhere they go. So I don't even know. Like City, the funny thing, the scary thing about the Leeds game was that City, they were not even in first gear. They were cruising in the game and they could have easily scored more. That's how good they were. So it's actually scary for other teams. That's just where I see it.
So I think this game week just signifies the title. You have City cruising to victory, 7-0. You have Liverpool also winning, although not as comfortably, clearly not as comfortably, but pretty comfortably, although Newcastle scored first. Some controversy there, but we'll get to that in due time. And then you have Chelsea join. I've told you before that Chelsea are not in title race. You thought I was lying. I don't know what you and Chelsea fans need to see to make you realize that they're not in the title race. But before we get to Chelsea, just on the Liverpool game, Jota's goal, should it have been cancelled? Because we had two Newcastle players on the floor. What
this
do you think?
This is the thing we've been talking about. The officiating in England is very, very poor. They might hype England the best league in the world, but I've said this for years, even before we even had the podcast. The officiating in England is very, very poor. We saw Martin Atkinson do this similar thing, and now Mike Dean has done the same. So every time, I don't blame Liverpool.
One match, remind me.
Martin Atkinson's one was against, I think it was Manchester United versus Arsenal.
No, let's not do that. Fred stepped on his foot. There is no way in hell that should be given as a foul. That was a clean goal from Arsenal.
No, I didn't say no. I didn't say, listen, if you went there, you should blow the whistle early. Like, the reason why the game, the phase of play that led to the goal occurred was because of the referee allowed it. It's still the same thing I'm saying.
That was the right call, so I don't think...
No, there's no right call there. A goalkeeper being on the floor is never a right call.
What? No. What? What?
Whether the goalkeeper was...
Your teammate barely touched you, and then
you lie on whether the floor. Whether it's the...
Players are overprotected.
Okay, let me say this. Have you ever seen a match being played without a goalkeeper in the post?
Who cares? Your teammate fouls you.
Let's not act like who cares.
No.
It's just the way football
your
works.
Teammate fouls you is not a foul. Hope you know that, Leonard.
No. No one said.
Do you know that?
No one said it's a foul or it's not a foul. What I'm highlighting is very simple. A game is played with a goalkeeper in the post. At the end of the day, what I'm just trying to say is very simple. Whether it's a foul or not, you can't play without a goalkeeper. So the referee allowed the phase. What I'm saying is the referees are the ones in charge of allowing the next phase of play to happen. For example, if Mark Atkinson had blown a whistle and said, oh, the goalkeeper is down, hold on, let's give this guy a treatment and see what's going on, that phase of play of Smith Rowe scoring will happen. It's the same thing I'm saying that for this Liverpool game. If the referee, Mike Dean, has said, oh, let me blow the whistle and allow these guys get treatment, that phase of Mane crossing the ball to Jota won't have happened. So it's the same thing. I've always said this thing. The referees have so much power. So that's just the way it is. And it's not just the about all the... We've seen scandalous calls, penalties being given, and the officiating has been very, very terrible, especially in the last 2-3 weeks.
The Arsenal goal was a clean goal. I maintain that. Your teammate bringing you down is not a foul. The only reason that the ref should stop the game now, this is the only reason, is if it is a head injury. If your teammate kicks you in the stomach, if your teammate kicks you in the leg, if your teammate kicks you in the butt, if your teammate does anything to you, as long as it's not a head injury, the ref has every right to tell the players to continue playing. And that is what happened in the United game. The hair did not hurt his head. He hurt his ankle. Nobody cares because it's Fred that did it. Boo-hoo. Cry as much as you want. It's not a foul because it's a United player that did it. Now, for this game, this Liverpool game, now, I'll say I'm not sure. I need to have watched the replay, but I'm still not sure if it was a head injury. Because two Newcastle players collided, and I know Isaac Hayden was on the floor. I forgot the other player that was on the floor with him. The both of them were rolling around like they got shot multiple times. And we saw 3 seconds later, the other Newcastle player got up to defend. Isaac Hayden was still on the floor. Now, if it's a head injury, by all means, stop the game. If it's not a head injury, now we've seen players where they touch your chest or they touch your ankle and you're holding your head because you want the ref to stop the game. Players do these things. So, you know that the players know the rules that the ref is obligated to stop the game if it is a head injury. So, you might as well feign a head injury, do you get? So now, if it was a head injury, then yes, the goal should have been cancelled. But if Isaac Hayden was hurt anywhere apart from his head, if he was hurt in his neck, in his back, in his chest, nobody cares if it's not a head injury and the game should not be stopped.
Well, the funny thing is when it doesn't happen to your club, it's very easy to judge. So I'll just
What I'm saying is simple.
Just hear me out. What I'm saying is simple. The referee, they have the power to change the course of a game. So whether I had injury or not. The reason why they respond to head injury first is the person can actually be bleeding in the, it can actually have internal damage or something. So they have to respond to that early. But other injuries, I've seen a situation where a teammate was trying to clear the ball. Then he cuts his teammate with his studs, and his teammate was in pain. They had to stop the game so that his teammate gets treatment. It's not so, all these
hazards. Wait. They had to stop the game when the other team wanted to score.
Hold on. Nothing like when the other team wanted to score. At the Liverpool incident, if the referee had blown his whistle once, that's what I'm saying. You people are talking from hindsight. You're talking because you're seeing the other phase in play happen. If the referee had blown his whistle once, that phase that Mane crossed the ball wouldn't have happened. That's why I'm highlighting to you. For example, the incident I'm talking about, if the referee had not stopped the game, the other player was down. A phase could have happened and the other opposition scores. That's the thing about all these things. Okay, different phases in different games.
I understand that you're a nice person. You're very, very... I mean, a fly should touch someone and Leonard is going to be like, oh, my poor baby, you're hurt. Let me come to your aid. So, after the game, Eddie Howe, Newcastle's manager, said that Isaac Hayden was dazed for 5 minutes. The same Isaac Hayden that continued playing the game, he didn't even have to go off for treatment. So, I'm like, how was he dazed? So, that clearly shows you that he was feigning the injury because he knew his team was in trouble. So, that's what I'm telling you, that players have sense to do this thing. Your manager says that you were dazed, but you were moving fine. You were coordinated. You were up in no time defending. Your teammate that was down with you was up in no time defending. So clearly they were faking it because they didn't want Liverpool to score. And I 100% agree with the ref and support the ref for not stopping the game because that was a clean goal. Because players pretend a lot.
Well, I'm not even going to disagree. Players pretend. That's all good and fine. But at the moment, that was a huge risk. Because let me tell you, if he had blown the whistle there for Isaac Hayden, that phase, I can remember the goal very clearly. That phase, because the ball went, it looped up. Sadio Mane had to make the run. They passed the ball to Sadio Mane. Mane crossed the ball. I remember that phase. That phase wouldn't have happened because there was no Liverpool goal. There was not really a real threat going to happen there. The only threat that was happening was when the ball went to the other side, then they had to recycle the ball. There was no real threat. But I'm just saying, like, at the end of the day, we don't know all these things. I'm just saying, the ref, this is not the first time I'm having issues with Mike Dean. Like, Liverpool could have won that game, obviously. But I'm just saying, those kind of calls are 50-50
calls. bit of a sour taste in the mouth, I get, because it's still contentious. Although I support it, but clearly people like you don't support it. I still get your point of view, even though I don't agree with it. We saw another contentious call. Arsenal getting a penalty, Soufal getting a second yellow card. He had a touch of the ball, but he followed through on Lacazette.
To me, that was not a penalty. That was not a second yellow. Very, very obvious. His two leg touched the
Penalty on.
ball. That was not a penalty. His first foot was on the ball. His second foot cleared the ball. So that was not a penalty. Look at Lacazette rolling on the floor like trailer jammed him. I don't understand, man. All these
Okay,
things.
but should I shock you?
Okay. Oh.
Coach,
What do you?
that boy said is a penalty.
David Moyes said it's a penalty.
Yes, David Moyes was critical of Vladimir Soufal. He said that Soufal did not make the tackle well, that Soufal had every chance to play the ball cleanly and he fluffed it. Because if you look at it, and I agree with Moyes, because Soufal had the chance to clear the ball, like not like stand and kick the ball, but like make full on contact with the ball. But what did he do? He went slightly over the top of the ball and then he grazed the ball and then went full on Lacazette with follow through, which obviously he did not intend. But the fact that you defend poorly, because that's poor defending. You had the chance to make a clear contact with the ball, you fluffed your lines and made minimal contact and then
Okay,
touched the ball. I
I'd
think
also
you
to
should
ask you two
punish him
questions.
for poor defending. He has to be punished for that.
Okay, I want to ask you two questions. Very, very simple questions. Was Lacazette in control of the ball?
It's hard to tell.
That's no, it's not hard to tell. You're lying to me. Number one, Lacazette was not in control of the ball. Number two, what is his name? So far, cleared the ball twice with his foot. Whether or not his foot went over the ball, no one cares because the first contact he made sure that he pushed the ball away. Then the second contact was with his other foot, and his other foot was the one that now cleared the ball out of the box. So he cleared the ball twice with his foot, changing the
I'm not
direction
at
of the ball twice. So, number one, a penalty is where the attacking player is the one in control of the ball, and there's now a follow through. This one, Lacazette didn't have control of the ball or anything, and they punished him and gave him a second yellow and a penalty. That's a very horrendous call, in my opinion, and very, very terrible call. Now, this is not the first time Anthony Taylor is doing a nonsense this season.
I'm not as adamant about this one as I am the Newcastle Liverpool one, because I clearly believe that the Liverpool goal should have stood. But right here, I'm 50-50, and here's why. He made contact with the ball, and follow-through happens in football, which is your point, I guess, which is fine. It makes sense that, okay, the player has made contact with the ball, but the follow-through. But then the flip side I'm looking at is, he was careless. He was clumsy. He had the chance to make the tackle properly. He did not. And now he's going to buy into the fact that people like you are going to come and say that he made contact with the ball. But how much contact did he really make with the ball?
Okay,
That's
very good. You
it.
see,
No, sorry.
I
Wait,
was
wait,
waiting
wait.
for you to say this thing. Very good.
That's it. That's the angle I'm coming from. So, like I said to you, I couldn't care less, really.
Okay, very good, very good. Now, I just have one question for
I
you.
think
Just one
this
question.
is a 50-50 call that could have gone either way.
Okay, just one question. Listeners, for those of you listening, this is where we'll catch Joshua. Now, so by that logic of, oh, you made slight contact with the ball and you took the man out.
Yeah.
Newcastle should have had a penalty yesterday. The Arnold penalty, Arnold tackle. Yes or no?
I
By
can't
that
remember.
logic,
I
oh,
cannot.
now you can't remember. Of course, of course, of
But
course.
okay, I'll tell you one I can remember, or two even. The Chelsea Leeds game last weekend, Alonso made contact with the ball, clumsy tackle like this, but the penalty was awarded and no one said anything. Why? Because
That was the
no.
penalty.
You know the thing. But
Okay.
if you watch it again, he made contact with the ball. So
No,
that's
no,
the
no, no,
point
no.
I'm
You can
saying
make no. Understand what I'm saying. You can make contact with the ball,
that.
but if the attacking player, this is the most important thing when you give a penalty. If the attacking player is clearly in control of the ball and in control of the situation, that means you making contact with the ball doesn't really make any difference to the decision the referee is trying to make. That means you're trying to take the man out because you clearly know that he's in control of that situation. That's what I'm trying to say.
I'm sorry. I'm not buying that. I'm sorry. You tried. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry.
We have to disagree. We have to agree because at the end of the day, that was a penalty. That was not a penalty for me.
So we also had the Leeds, Matheus Cleek of Leeds and Jorginho last minute. He made contact with the ball. There's nobody on earth that would tell me Cleek did not make contact with the ball. I'm not even going to answer you. Cleek made contact with the ball, but he also made contact with Jorginho. A penalty was awarded. And
that's the same thing I'm saying. That was not a penalty. That was we can sit here and argue about penalties or no penalties. But one thing we should know is there are decisions where we'll come here and see that this decision is very, very harsh and this one is horrendous. So we cannot just be, because this one, they gave this one last week, they should be giving this one. If we go by that, then I'm sorry, we are ruined football. Because I can tell you, even the Arsenal fans that I spoke to, most of them, they knew, they said it, when that wasn't a penalty.
You see the problem, there's no consistency, because if everyone knows that Marcos Alonso is not the best defender on earth. And so, when he makes a clumsy tackle and touches the ball slightly and then touches the man, everybody shouts, oh, it's a penalty because it's Alonso. It's a penalty. It's clumsy. But when it's Vladimir Sufar, who is a better defender one-on-one, everybody says, no, he touched the ball. That's double standards for me. And that's where I'm coming from. So, either both of them are penalties, or both of them are not penalties. I'm not going to accept anybody telling me one is a penalty, one is not a penalty. So let's pick a side and stick with it. Thank you very much. Midweek games. Obviously, Arsenal winning 2-0. Lacazette missed that penalty in question that we've been arguing about. But it didn't matter because Smith Rowe came off the bench throughout the second. And now we have a big game this weekend. Liverpool face Spurs. Spurs very well rested because they've had, I believe, 3 games postponed. So, do you think they'll be match rusty, or do you think they'll be well rested? How is it going to turn out?
They're well rested already, but I just think no matter how much they want to rest, I think Liverpool will win the game. Liverpool, they are just too good, and their firepower is actually insane. Unless Harry Kane steps up, which we've been saying since like 4 months now. So unless he steps up, I don't think they can put everything on Son Heung-min to actually be doing all the magic for them. So unless Harry Kane is ready to play, if he's not ready to play, then I don't think this is a big game. Like the difference in quality, the difference in quality is very glaring. The difference in form. It's very obvious to see. So I think Liverpool wins this comfortably. Yeah, Antonio Conte is not a magician. He's not Jesus Christ. Antonio Conte is not Jesus Christ. Like, there are some things that you cannot change. So he can't turn Berg Vine into Messi. Like, Berg Vine.
So if Spurs win, is it going to be the craziest thing you've ever seen in football? I don't think so.
If Spurs win, that's a huge upset, I'm telling you. If Spurs win. It wouldn't be the craziest thing, but it would be a huge upset. But like, if Liverpool were to win.
Yeah, upset, but I don't know about huge upset because...
Nah, it would be a huge upset because, let's be real, like, Spurs, they're not good enough. Let me be real. Like, who's going to stop Salah? Who is the defender that will stop Salah in Spurs' defense?
Minus that, yeah. No, but nobody can stop Salah in Spurs. But
okay, who wants to score for Tottenham?
Liverpool have not been at their best, have they? Struggled against Aston Villa, especially second half. Struggled against Wolves. Yesterday, considered first to Newcastle. So it's not like it's Liverpool of a month ago that was giving people fours and fives.
No, let's not even do that. First off, it's the same team. These two teams you called, they are very, very good teams. Manchester City, who are the best club in England now, they struggled against those two teams. Since Gerrard took over against Villa boss, Villa have been playing good. The same thing with Wolves. Wolves have been very, very good defensively. And even City struggled to even break them down with 10 men.
So at the end of the day, we all know that Liverpool most likely win this game. But it might not be as straightforward, but I expect Liverpool to win.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, FPL segment.
Okay, so with the entire COVID stuff and postponement of different fixtures, what tactics are you going to be implemented? Because we can't just say, oh, transfers and all of that. Like, how can we navigate? And these are the situations where I think right now managers need to be tactical, because if you're not tactical enough, you might actually get someone that might not be playing in a few, maybe might not even play during Boxing Day fixtures. So, like, what tactics are you looking to implement? What strategies are you looking to start implementing going forward?
For tactics, yeah, I think first of all, I think that this is just basically luck first and foremost, which is odd because we have this FPL segment to advise people what to do, but here's me saying that it's luck, and I'll explain why. Some people have, so 5 games have been called off. That's 10 teams. FPL makes 15. FPL is 15 players. Would you believe if I told you that some people have 10 players from those 10 teams that are not playing? What can such a person do? It's nothing. Your team is ruined. You have only 5 players available this week. While some people have 7 players available, some people are lucky enough to have 9. I only need 2 transfers, which was my situation. I've already done my 2 transfers. I've taken my -4. So it depends on how lucky you are. I'll say the minimum. So now this is it. The maximum you should take is a -4. You should not be taking a -8 or a -12 because you want to get players. No. I usually tell people don't take a hit, don't take any minus. But this week, a -4 might actually be needed, because especially if you want to get, say, a City player because they have a good fixture, or an Aston Villa forward because they are playing against Burnley. So if you want to get a -4 for bringing people like that, then all well and good. If you have only 6 players available, my guy, there's no advice I can give you. It's just unfortunate.
Okay. So we know that we're actually limited in terms of players that we can actually pick from, since you have so many teams that have had their fixtures postponed already. So, in the teams that are available, which teams should be targeting their players?
I just mentioned Aston Villa. I say target Aston Villa forwards, especially Watkins. We saw him get 12 points in the last match that he played, a goal and assist, and as well as bonus points. I say target him. I say target him. If you have only 1 transfer to do and is a defender you want to buy, then I'll say target a City defender or target a defender. Target a City forward, very necessary. So you have the likes of Foden, Bernardo Silva, De Bruyne if you can afford it, but I doubt people can afford De Bruyne because everyone already has Arnold and Salah and the likes who are already taking up much of the funds. So if you can get an Arsenal defender, Leeds look toothless at the moment, an Aston Villa forward and the likes, just, yeah, those players, those teams I just mentioned, the positions, yeah.
But yeah, be specific, like give us names, especially for points, because like you said already, our funds are already taken by some of all these premiums.
For names, yeah. I'd say if you don't have Ramsdale by now, I don't know what you're doing. Because Ramsdale started at 4.5 million. So cheap, but now I think it's up to 5.1 or so. Maybe 5.2 even. So I say Ramsdale, I say Tierney. Leeds are so poor at the back, and you can see Tierney getting a clean sheet and also getting an assist or a goal. So I say Ramsdale, Tierney, Watkins from Aston Villa, Matty Cash, my target, Then for Chelsea, I'll say only Mason Mount. The rest, I would not go anywhere near them. For Man City, Man City just like just pick anyone because anyone could score. But for the safest picks, I'll say Foden. Bernardo Silva went off with a knock, so I'm not sure if he's going to start. But I think he's going to play. But I'm not sure he's going to start. So I'll say Foden is the safest pick. De Bruyne too is a safe pick, but an expensive one.
Okay. Okay, so now, if, next one I want to do is the buy, sell, keep. So, but I won't mention names specifically, but I will mention some teams. So, for those of us that have Manchester United assets, okay, Tottenham, they are back in action this game week. Watford assets, Crystal Palace assets. Should we be looking to move those players, or even the West Ham assets? So should we be looking to move those players, or is it a case where we should keep some of them?
Okay, so now it depends on what you need. So, for example, say you have 8 players available. You should sell. You can sell 2 of them and get a -4. You don't need to sell all 3. So, I would say, if people that have Antonio, I want them to just explain to me why they still have Antonio. Antonio has been blanking for like 2 years now. So that's how long it feels. So I'd say sell Antonio and buy Watkins. Easy decision, so easy. I'd say sell Ronaldo because a 12.5 million player playing is pointless. You can buy him back next week. So I'd say sell him. You can use the money from Ronaldo to buy a City asset. You can use, say, just imagine you sell Ronaldo and one midfielder. You buy Watkins and a City midfielder. It makes more sense than just having Ronaldo on your bench when United are not playing. So I'd say sell the expensive assets like Ronaldo, like Antonio. Yeah. You can leave the cheaper ones like Livramento. You can leave those ones if you have other defenders. But the expensive ones, you should be selling them so you can get some City assets and even Arsenal assets.
Okay. All right. So for the burning question, I know we'll normally do three every time we do the FPL segment, but it'd be interesting to see which names you will call this time. So what are the captaincy options for this game?
First of all, the King of Egypt, of course, Mohamed Salah. Mason Mount became the youngest Chelsea player ever to score in 4 consecutive games. I'm not sure Chelsea will win, but I would say I expect Mount to deliver again, and he's surely going to start because Chelsea have been hit with COVID in the forward areas. I say Mount, and I'll say Phil Foden. He just looks like he can cause damage anytime he's on the pitch, and Newcastle are not a good team, so. Yeah, I expect Foden to get on the score sheet.
Okay, but I'm tired of this God of Egypt thing every week. I'm tired, man. I'm tired of this.
Oh, I said King today, but yeah, you upgraded it to God. Yeah, at least you're finally learning that he's a God
of Egypt. I'm not learning anything. The game is getting boring if we're captaining the same person every week.
Yeah, getting boring, but what can we do? You have to be safe. You don't want to fall off the ranks. I think FPL will get interesting now that games are being called off. It's already getting interesting. He actually favored me because guess what? I got 75 points last game week. I got 85 points game week before. So, yeah, let me brag. I've been having a tough time.
No one asked you, please. No one asked you.
No. I have to brag because I've been having a tough time. And finally,
I'm telling you as a co-host, like, listeners, we don't care about you hearing that many points. No one cares. No one cares.
Of course,
you spent a lot of time with us. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.